This is the Homebrew Game Club, a podcast about modern, brand new aftermarket video games for retro consoles. On this podcast, we pick one game a month to play and talk about. Today's game is Alfonso's Arctic Adventure for the NES. My name is Nick, also known as Divertov. And joining me today are...
This is Bart, also known as Clever Username Needed on Instagram. I really do need a clever username.
And Connor Nash, that's C-O-N-O-R-N-A-S-H on Twitter. I don't know if you'll include this in the podcast, but I love that you actually say the intro every time and you don't like just have it recorded as a soundbite and put it in.
No, it's not fine.
Because it totally gets me amped. It gets me so amped for this. It gets me right into like podcast mindset. I'm like, now I'm here. We're doing it.
Yeah, I have to. I put it like my podcast voice, you know? Because like,
oh yeah, totally.
We're just sitting here bitching. I'm just like, oh yeah. Oh, okay, let me do the intro.
Yeah.
This is the Homebrew Game Club.
That's how it sounds like to me.
Okay, good. Good. I'm glad I can amp you up that way.
Yes.
You know, and people listening at home, they hear it and they get amped. Everybody's amped. Everybody's fucking ready to go now, man. So see, we are recording now. Bart and I are now, it is the afternoon. We used to record at night.
Yes.
And all of us, I think, were a little bit tired, you know, and now Bart and I, it's the middle of the afternoon.
I'm drinking a Dr. Pepper.
I know, I'm just chugging like iced tea here. Like I'm amped up on caffeine right now. I just like run through a wall. And then there's Connor over there in London.
Yep.
At where it's just, late. It's nighttime late. Over there.
It's pretty late.
And so you drinking it? What are you drinking, a Guinness?
I'm drinking a Guinness, and it's of course right out of our beautiful Homebrew Game Club glass.
I love that pint glass.
It's a great glass.
Awesome. Okay, guys. You guys ready to take an adventure?
It's not going to be a warm one.
It's not going to be a warm one. Are you ready to take an adventure to the frozen tundra of remote Canada and eat some raw fish? As much goddamn raw fish.
So much fish.
Heck yeah, eh?
You could feed an entire aquarium off this the amount of raw fish you pick up in this game. Okay, Alfonso's Arctic Adventure. This is a game for the NES, developed by Spoony Bard Productions. They've also got some other well-known NES homebrew titles like Golf. Golf was a kind of a knockoff of NES Golf, but that was for a game called Golf Story. It was like a tie-in to that game.
Is that
and also
like,
what's that?
Is that like the Simpsons episode where he's like, "Oh, why are my bro bones so brittle? I always drink my milk."
Yeah. Or it's like if they were going to do a spin-off of Alf in the 80s, and it was like a girl Alf. Yeah, it's Galf.
I think it's meant to be kind of like that, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. And also, Jay and Silent Bob Mall Brawl, it's a beat-em-up.
Was that officially licensed?
It looks a lot like River City Ransom, that kind of Kunio-kun kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Was that officially licensed for the Jay and Silent Bob thing? Or was that just like
yes,
a tribute?
Yes, that was officially licensed.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So, yeah, no, Kevin Smith talking about it on Twitter, stuff like that. So these games, both of them were published by Limited Run Games. And in fact, the digital of this game, if you get it on Switch or Xbox, that was also published by Limited Run. I'm kind of wondering if they're going to do another cart run at some point. But so this game was originally an entry in the 2017 NESDEV competition. After that, it got a successful Kickstarter in 2018. It raised $32,000 Canadian, and some of those Canadian dollars were mine. I was actually a backer on this. I looked it up. This was the second NES game, homebrew game, that I backed on Kickstarter after Micromages.
Nice.
This game was published digitally to Switch and Xbox in July of 2021. It is the sequel to Eskimo Bob, another NES homebrew game that is very similar, and it was inspired by the Eskimo Bob Flash cartoon. Eskimo Bob, the cartoon, launched in 2001, and it ran through the 2000s. Have either of you watched any of those?
I have not.
I have not, but I do have a great affection for Flash cartoons, and so I actually didn't know about that until now, so I'm going to have to go back and take a look at those.
I should have sent you some because there's one. It's about St. Patrick's Day, and it's all like we're Irish, and it was. I'm just going to send this to you guys because before I continue here, I want you guys to watch at least one of these.
Okay,
here I'm gonna. Yeah, let me send you the link. Okay, so I just sent you guys to the link. We're Irish. That is the name. Eskimo Bob 18, We're Irish. I will put a link to this in the show notes. I don't know if I'm going to leave this in, but yeah, there you go.
Did you go text or email? Just,
what?
Text or email.
I just put it in the chat. In
oh, the chat. There. Okay.
Yeah, just watch this and let me know what you think. I forgot how. Okay, this one is like almost like a music video. They usually do have some kind of like dialogue, or I have no idea what's going on here.
If only we knew somebody that was Irish that could explain it.
Obviously, this is the traditional walrus jailing that we perform every year,
right?
After which we dance and poke the leprechaun with a stick. I can't believe you're not as aware of my culture as you need to be, guys. This is clearly a very famous Irish tradition here.
Yeah, at what point is the eating of the raw fish, is that a thing as well?
I believe those are actually fish-shaped potatoes.
Oh, fish baby. Oh, of course they are. Of course. You know, that is one of my favorite kind of European folktales, is the story of St. Patrick poking the walrus.
Poking the walrus.
Jesus Christ. Oh, the end of that video was something else, man.
I would describe what we just watched for the listeners, but you know what? I don't think it's really that kind of thing where you can describe it. It's
no.
I would say it's a little like a music video set to some kind of a river dancey sort of, you know, Irish music. And yeah, it's very surreal. It makes no sense at all.
Just like 90% of Flash cartoons that were released at that time.
Very true.
Exactly. And that's kind of my point, is these videos tend to be anywhere from like 30 seconds to sometimes are like 5 or 6 minutes long. They kind of have a plot sometimes.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. As I said, we were supposed to record this episode a year ago, and we kept putting it off. Originally, this was going to be our very first episode, and we decided to bump it because I really wanted to talk about Lizard. And so this was going to be our second episode. And then we decided to bump it because you guys wanted to do a Halloween game, and we did Dead Ais. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And sorry, I have to drink because you mentioned Lizard.
Oh, yeah, take a drink. We're going to hit a lot of tropes here. So, yeah, if you're playing the drinking game at home, prepare to get drunk off your ass. So we kept putting off this game, and so I kept prepping for it. Every month I would be like, okay, next we're going to talk about Alfonso, so I need to go back and look at my notes. I kind of like ran out of stuff to prep for, and I'm like, I'm just going to go watch the show. So I ended up watching, I was going to watch a couple, you know, and just kind of check it out. I ended up watching all 54 episodes of Eskimo Bob.
Good Lord.
Yeah, I did. Because it was cute. It was like a time capsule, right? It was like going back to the internet, back when the internet was fun.
Yeah.
And you know, like the craziest thing that you'd see on the internet was a video of a cat playing a piano.
Yep.
Instead of like awful conspiracy theories and the world coming apart, it was just like, hey, the internet is fun and stupid. And so, I don't know, it's strange. It did give me a lot of background into this game. Like all of the enemies appear in the show at some point.
Yes.
Based on the one that we just watched, I can tell you, A, I love it, the cartoon. It did make me laugh. Yes. And B, I feel like I am watching part of a prequel to the game. I feel like I really do want to watch more of these.
Yes.
Yeah. And you do, like, all of the characters are in the show. They're all there. So yeah. And you kind of, you get their relationships and stuff like that. So like Yuck, who is the main baddie in this game, like he's also one of the main baddies in the show. And the fish that carries you around, the fish that's in a little UFO, that is actually a character in the show. And I don't really understand what the point of it is, but it's, yeah, I don't understand what the point of any of it is, but everybody's in there. So yeah, even the bird that shits on your head, that's in there. So
that's a very annoying enemy. But yeah, I'm just after watching Eskimo Bob 2, and that's when, you know, he gets the stick to poke the walrus with. Like, that's
right.
Clearly a very core mechanic to the game.
Yeah, that is the origin story, right?
And just seeing the upload date as being February 5th, 2001, and I'm like, oh, wow. Yes. That's some OG stuff right there.
Yeah.
So like Eskimo Bob.
Strong Bad days.
Yeah, like Homestar Runner days. So this is like,
yeah,
this is legit.
I mean, I think these were coming out maybe, I don't know, when did Homestar Runner start? This might have been before Homestar Runner.
Maybe.
Homestar Runner was late 90s, but I don't know for sure.
It's like prime E-Bombs world.
Yeah, E-Bombs world. I'm looking at this on Newgrounds right now.
Think Homestar Runner, but like that makes even less sense.
Yes.
That's Eskimo Bob.
Awesome.
There are a few times where I like laughed out loud, but it rarely happened. It's not that kind of a show. It was more just like you just kind of vibe on it, you know? I don't know. But okay. Right. So we're talking about the game now. The game. Alfonso's Arctic Adventure. Right. Okay, guys, tell me about this game. What's happening in this game? What's the point of the game? What are you doing?
Well, now that I've seen some of the little cartoons, it's the cartoon come to life. You get to control the cartoon characters and have a surreal little explanation of, you know, what you want to do. You just kind of... No, that's a terrible explanation. It's a puzzle platformer.
It is a puzzle platformer. Yeah, I think a lot of emphasis on action. So it's a action... This is not a Witch and Wiz kind of game. It's side-scrolling, right?
Yes.
Two screens connected. Every kind of little world that you go into is two screens. There's a world map. Okay, so the game is broken into six main episodes. Every episode has a world map that is very reminiscent of the world map from Super Mario Brothers 3. And so you go to each little stage, and every stage is a two-screen obstacle course that you have to figure out how to get through.
Well, I could say, funnily enough, you mentioned the overworld looking like Super Mario Brothers 3. I get it. Yes, it has extreme Mario 3 vibes. When you actually play each level, for me, it had real Mario 2 vibes. It just had that feeling for me. And maybe it's because Alfonso's green, you know, and maybe I don't know. It just really reminded me of some of those like ice levels in Mario 2.
Yeah, the ice is there.
And yes, it is very much a puzzle platformer. You know, there are times where you have to navigate to one side, do a thing, change characters, go back to the other side, do one little thing, go all the way back, change characters. You know, there's definitely a way to solve each level, but there's also more than one way to solve each level, which is kind of cool.
True.
The Mario 3 vibe definitely is very clear as an inspiration, to the extent that like I'm singing the little overworld theme every time I'm on the overworld. But it kind of adds to that a little bit, right? Like in Mario 3, there was, you know, some element of things that could be hidden or you could kind of jump across. But there's like huge amounts of the map that you could actually find through secret levels that are not immediately visible when you go to the level for that world for the first time. So I think that's pretty cool. And then what Bart mentioned there about the multiple characters, I think that adds a lot of depth to the game.
That's a very important element of the game, right?
Right. And just for me, like, the characters are just, they're very distinct, right? It's not like minor differences. So it's the Mario 2 thing. It's like,
yeah, right.
I know I'm not the biggest Mario 2 fan, but like the character differences are much more subtle. Whereas these are very distinct characters, very distinct, you know, talents or like abilities. And I think that really influences.
I thought for a second you were going to compliment Mario 2. Sorry for interrupting you. It sounded like you were going to have something nice to say about it. Damn it.
Punch down. That's my only
one.
But yeah, that kind of like distinctiveness, I think, again, it just adds that extra depth to the gameplay. And then there is this element of finding the golden fish in every level.
Right.
And I really liked that. I don't know what it was, but that just tickled my brain. But I think that adds, like, it's because it's not like a puzzle element per se. Like saying like you have to get the golden fish is not describing a puzzle mechanic, but the golden fish is placed in a way that it's kind of a puzzle to find it. And that's like a really interesting thing for me. I liked the exploration of the levels, finding hidden doors, things like that. And that was just one of the things that I think made it a really engaging kind of mechanic for me.
Yeah, so there are secrets in the game. There are secret exits. There are the golden fish, which is kind of a side quest. Every screen, every level has a golden fish hidden somewhere in there, and you have to find it. It is often placed in like hidden places or places that are difficult to get to, and you know, maybe you have to go through the level a couple of times before you realize, you know, where it is and how to get it. And there are even warp zones in the game. I haven't even found a couple of them. I did a complete playthrough the second time that I did this game, and I tried to find everything. I still didn't find a couple of the warp zones. But yeah, to go back to finish describing the game here, so it does rely on this multiple characters mechanic. This is a huge part of the game. So every level that you're in, you have some levels, not every level, you have a little igloo that you can walk into that changes you into one of three other characters. Alfonso is your main character, the little green guy with a stick, right? You poke with the stick. And that works as an attack. It also works to clear out packed in snow that you might have to use as like an obstacle. There is Magnus, who is a guy in a little parka. He looks a lot like Eskimo Bob. And he plays a lot like Eskimo Bob does in the first game. And he has a punch down, and so he can break through snow on the ground. He can also use it to attack, and he has really high jumps. There's the girl, who has a sword, which is really nice. It's a projectile weapon, so it goes almost all the way across the screen, but she cannot duck. And then you have Finwood, who is a big guy. He's partially indestructible. He's really heavy, and he can break through stuff on the ground, but he jumps really low. So you have all these different characters, and as you were saying, they're very distinct, and they are used like they're part of the tools that you have to solve the puzzles in the game. You know, so you get to one place where you cannot proceed if you have Alfonso, so you've got to go find the other character and use that character in a way that he can't do so that you can get through the level. And I think, yeah, that's implemented really well. So yeah, the plot of the game is Eskimo Bob is missing, right? He just disappears. So you have to go find him. And to find him, Alfonso gets the idea of what is Bob like? Bob really likes eating raw fish. That is a major plot point of the show, okay? Most of the episodes of the show somehow revolve around Eskimo Bob eating raw fish. So his idea is, I'm going to go find raw fish, and that, you know, maybe that will help us find Bob again. How did we play this game? How'd you guys play this game?
I played it on an emulator on my Mac.
You had the NES ROM?
Mm-hmm. Same. My emulator.
Yeah, okay. Back a year ago when I played it through on the, I had the emulator. I had an original cartridge. The second time through for this podcast, I decided to do a completionist run. So I played through the entire game, every secret exit I could get. I found every fish, all that stuff. And I did that completely on the Switch. Okay, guys, what works about this game? What did you like about this game? Let's talk about some of the positives.
I mean, for me, just like straight away, the art style is just really, really signature, really unique, yeah. Really, really engaging. Having seen the Flash, you know, cartoons before even makes it more kind of endearing and more interesting, because you know that like even things like the walrus, they're almost exactly the same sprite as they used in the Flash cartoon. It's just really authentic. It really is like that kind of vibe. And it's not like they've been like had to be shrunk down too bad on the NES hardware. Like, they're still really colorful. The palette is really rich. It still feels like a really, you know, attractive, engaging sprite. I've said this before, take another drink. But like, when the main character you're playing with in one of these games is like an interesting and really engaging sprite, I just think that like really elevates the game. And all four of the main characters are distinctive and really engaging. There's nothing I really have to say that's like, oh, you could improve one of the characters by doing this. The only thing I would maybe say is that the girl, because she's black, she's wearing black outfit, sometimes it's hard to see her on a black background or where her hitbox is. But apart from that, it's like awesome.
Is she wearing a black? I thought it was red. She's wearing a red outfit.
Let me see if I'm completely wrong here. Like,
what game were you playing?
Right?
I didn't like the guy with the toadstool on his head, yeah. Or the princess with the pink dress. Oh, she floated too much.
Yeah, the guy who is the tall guy in green and blue. Like, yeah, his weird jumps. I was just not into that.
Oh, she does wear red. Okay, hang on. Yeah. Oh, it's because she. So she does wear red, but she has black outline of her figure.
Oh, okay.
And so that was like more so than the other characters. It was like just maybe harder. Like at some point, like her body is like 2 pixels wide if she's on a black background. I really enjoyed where they put the goldfish. I thought it was really, really smart in most of the levels. I thought it was really thoughtful. I think the level design is really, really good for the most part.
Yeah.
The like the actual structure of it, the way you may get around, the way the certain secrets put in certain places. And so, yeah, the actual mechanical playing of the game, I was just like, every time I was in a level, I was really into it. I was like, okay, what's going to be in this level? What am I going to see? What's going to be new? What's going to be different? Mm-hmm. What am I going to do differently with these mechanics that I know of the four characters? Because they're also all introduced very early. Like all four characters are introduced in the first world.
Right.
So you definitely, you're thinking, oh, well, I get to like get bored of these characters. But with the exception of maybe some of the enemies in the later levels, I didn't really get bored of, you know, using these characters or playing with them.
Yeah. You know, talked about the graphics.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead, Bart.
No, I was just going to say to Connor's point about the location of the goldfish. That was a thing that I simultaneously loved and hated, because in the process of looking for these goldfish, there are like, are we calling that packed snow? They kind of look like little clouds, but is that
yeah,
what that is?
It's packed snow. Right?
Yeah. So like the majority of them, you break those and there's a fish. But some of the games I would inadvertently, while on this like laser focused quest to find the fish before I moved on, I'd break them all and I'd be like, oh shit, I can't go any farther in the level because I broke the one fish or the one cloud that would let me, I guess, cloud, snow, whatever, that would let me jump up to get up to the next thing to change into the other guy. And, you know, it's just like, oh crap. So that was a thing that I ran into a lot, which
yeah,
I actually kind of, I hated it and then I loved it because then it really makes you think about which ones you need to break or not break. That was really cool.
You can definitely soft lock your way out of solving the level, and you'll have to kill yourself, you know, because that's the only way to get out of the level. I to talk to Connor's point about the graphics, you know, I think there is something about those early Flash cartoons that translates amazingly well to the NES.
Absolutely.
In a way, not only the animation, but also the goofy humor, you know.
Yeah.
If anything, the game to me is funnier than the cartoon. Like, I don't know why that is, but it's like you have these interstitials like in between levels where or sometimes you'll get like a prompt before you do a boss fight or something like that, where the characters are talking to each other and it's got like the punch out sounds, you know, like where they're yeah. jabbering at each other. But those are really well done and they're funny, you know.
They're
goofy and funny. And it's a really, I think in that moment, the game just feels really snappy and well put together, you know, really yeah, well done.
And you showed us the cartoon, what is it called? Being Irish or whatever, the Irish one that you showed us. It literally right. ends with the two of them just looking at the camera and their mouths open up in this weird shape and they burp and it says the end.
Right.
The way their mouths open up in that weird shape, I feel like happened 3 or 4 times during the game when something big would happen. And I always right. got a chuckle out of however that sprite changed. It was just almost like this like huge look of shock on their face or something. It was, I chuckled at it every single time I saw it. I did love I don't think a low rent quality is what I don't mean it in a negative way, but it feels like you said, the same way that the Flash cartoon feels. It feels very homegrown and, you know, I don't know, it translates really well.
Homemade, right. Right. And, well, and I mean, the Flash animation stuff is barely animated, which mm-hmm. is great when you're putting on the NES where you have like 2 frames of animation for everything, you know?
Right.
So, and they all have this, everybody does the eyebrow, like the little, arched eyebrow thing. And it's very distinct on the NES. Everybody still has the eyebrow. So. Some other stuff that worked for me. I really liked the boss fights.
Me too.
I thought they were extremely well done. Like the Easter Bunny fight here might be the best designed boss fight I've seen in a homebrew NES game. It's just amazingly well done. But there are quite a few. They all show off the abilities of the characters.
True.
You know, in their own ways, because you do use a different character for each boss fight.
I will say this, the one that surprised me the most, and I'm with you in that I like the Easter Bunny fight the best, because that was clever as hell. But the one that I liked and that surprised me the most was the snowflake, because all of a sudden, you're playing a shmup. And like, that's right. You know what I mean?
That was
so freaking cool. I kind of wish that had been a mechanic a little more in the game. I really, really loved that one.
Yeah. I would say the one boss fight that I really didn't like that much was the final boss. But I mean, it's more like I don't like it, but I respect it because that one just kicked my ass so hard. But
maybe that just left a sour taste in my mouth. Maybe I just like that's my last memory of the boss fight. Because then I played my second playthrough and I was playing the first boss fight. I was like, oh, this is kind of good. Maybe it's just because like that last boss fight is really, really tough. And I'm just like, I don't know, boss fights in this game, bro.
One of the things that I also liked is when you hit that last boss, there was something about the timing, at least for me, and I noticed it happening more times. It was more often than not. Whenever I would hit the last boss fight or the last boss, and when you hit him, it would do like a doot-doot-doot. It's like some kind of a three-tone signal to let you know that you hit it. Something about the timing of it, it just, maybe it was sheer luck on my part, but every time I hit it, it timed up perfectly with the music.
Oh, huh.
And so it almost felt like, you know, the get into the rhythm of the game, use the rhythm of the music to help defeat the boss. And when you would hit it, it would,
oh, okay,
that three note structure would like meld really well in with the music. It was really cool.
Nice.
I don't know. Maybe I just got lucky, or maybe that's how you're supposed to beat it. You're supposed to use the music.
That's maybe something I missed out on.
I think there's definitely a rhythm to the final boss fight. If you get out of rhythm, you will die.
Mm-hmm.
You have to hit it exactly right. If you miss, then you're pretty much fucked. So you have to play that one perfectly every time. What about the music, Connor? You have anything to say about that?
You know, I don't have much to say. I think that, again, it's very true to the Flash cartoon in that the music is fairly monophonic. There's like one melody. It kind of sticks to that. Sound effects are pretty straightforward. You poke something with a stick, it makes a noise. You know, you destroy something, it makes noise.
Right.
I don't think it gets in the way of the game. I don't think it's something that's distracting. But there wasn't anything that I was really humming myself after I was playing the game.
Yeah, nothing really stood out to me.
Yeah.
It's kind of goofy. It's silly music.
It's silly
I had
music,
the level cleared music. Every time you would clear the level, it was like, like that was just in a loop in my head for a week. Yeah. I'd be like at work doing something, hooking up something to the camera, and I'd get it. It would go in correctly, and I'd be like, and I'd be like, ah. Jesus.
It's a little jingle, right? It's a nice little jingle.
But when I found myself humming that to myself when I would do something correct and I could move on to the next thing, that's when I knew I played this game too much.
Yeah. Also, I found myself carrying around a bucket of fish and I would just randomly eat one, just swallow it whole, right?
That's on you.
That's on me. Okay, well, so what about some of the stuff that maybe we didn't like? Let's talk about, because I have a lot of things to say here. But before we get started with that, I want to preface this part of the conversation by saying that most of my criticisms of the game are based around my original experience of it, which is to say my first time through, I played a version of the game that is no longer the current version that is out there. But I want to go ahead and talk about this stuff because I think that we could have an interesting conversation about how these superficially small changes to a game can dramatically affect your experience of playing it. So I need to explain the context here. There are actually two versions of this game that are out there. After the game came out on Switch and Xbox, he changed a couple of key elements of the game in response to some feedback that he had gotten from people who had played the game on those platforms. The first one is, when you die, there are lives and continues in the game. So the punishment for death here is when you die enough times that you have to continue, all of your goldfish are reset. So if you are trying to get all the goldfish in the game, when you die and have to continue, all your goldfish get zeroed out. So if you want the goldfish on the old cartridge, you have to do a 1cc run. But when the game was updated, that was removed. So now when you die and continue, you get to keep all the goldfish that you have collected. The other change that was made is when you finish a level now, if you missed any of the goldfish that were in the level, or you missed a secret exit, you will get a prompt. So when you collect all the fish in the level, you know, and it says, good job, I'm going to boot you back out to the map, you get a prompt if you want to, where you can retry the level. And that indicates that you missed something. And if you hit retry, it will just put you back at the beginning of the level and you have to play through it again and find the stuff that you missed. I find both of these things completely, they seem like small changes, but to me, they completely changed my experience of the game. But I do just want to say, depending on how you played this game, you may be playing the older version of the game. So like if anybody's playing this on the cartridge, you're going to be playing the older version of the game.
I would imagine that changes the experience pretty deeply too. I mean, just from my own playthrough, I definitely kind of wanted to retry some levels, and the fact that I couldn't was a little bit frustrating. So yeah, I think that's something people might want to bear in mind.
So did you play the previous version?
That's what I played all the way through.
Okay. And you were using save states though, right?
I was.
First time around, I used save states. Second time around, I didn't finish my playthrough, but I didn't use save states the second time around.
See, that, so here's another trope everybody can drink at home where I yell at Connor and Bart about, especially Connor, about using save states when they play these games. So
yes,
this is the game that kicked that off. Because when we played through the first time,
right,
I got so goddamn frustrated with this game because I wasn't using save states. I was playing it on a flash card and it was really annoying to use save states on there. And the... You know, I was having so much trouble with this game. I found it really frustrating. And I was telling you guys about that. And Connor was like,
he was just like, I don't care.
Yeah, I didn't have any problem with that at all. And I'm like, what the hell you mean you didn't have any problem with that? And he goes, well, I'm using save states. And I'm like, okay, hold the fuck on.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You know, it's because,
why?
You know, I want to take it like if we're going to play these for this podcast, at least the first time through, I want to play it the way that it was, quote unquote, meant to be played. So, you know, if somebody's making a game for a retro console, in my mind, you're making it to be played on that console, or at the very least, as close as you can get to the experience of playing on that console.
Yeah, I mean, I respect that idea, but I will play it the first time around the way I can play the game, or the way I would like to play the game. And then if I enjoy
that's how I feel.
I will give the developer the benefit of the doubt, like, oh, maybe I should try and play it the way they really intended, like, quote unquote, the more authentic way. But I am selfish and ignorant, and that's who I am. And a save state person is who I am. I'm sorry. That's who I was born to be.
Me too.
Well, okay, that's fine. But I'm talking about, we do a podcast where we play retro games, you know, where we play these homebrew games.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so to me, it's like, if I play through a game, like this one, and I'm playing through the game the way most people who listen to this podcast are probably going to play this game, which is they're not going to use save states. You know, you can't, if you play it on Switch or Xbox, you can't use save states, right? Or if you get a cartridge, you can't use save states. And so to me, in my eyes, we have an obligation for the podcast to play through it that way, the way that most people are going to play it. And if I'm playing through it that way, and I find I don't like it, and I'm like, you know, this game would be a lot more fun if I use save states, then I'll go through and I'll play through the whole game with save states. And I'll be like, okay, that was a lot more fun. But I'm going to bring that to the podcast. I'm going to be saying like, look, when I played through this game without save states, it really got on my fucking nerves. That's what I would have said about this game. I was not having fun playing the game. It felt like work. I was not enjoying it. It just really annoyed the shit out of me. And the reason is, I just thought it was too hard to be fun. And if I had been using save states on an emulator, I for sure would not have felt that way, because it would have taken out the whole penalty for death. So this is what prompted this whole discussion about like how to play the game.
This is why it's a trope on the podcast.
This is why it's a trope on the pocket, because it's an ongoing discussion. You know, like if you're playing Lizard, take a drink, right? But I mean, you guys had a real hard time with Lizard. You didn't like it that much, and because it was so difficult. Well, you know, to me, it's like if you're playing Lizard and you play through it for a couple hours and you don't like it because it's so difficult, then start using save states. That's fine. The point is you tried it the way that this was put out into the world, you know, which is without save states. This is how the game is. It's really, you know, challenging. That's fine. You know, in my eyes, but at least you tried it that way. But to do the save states first and then come back to it like that, because then we're having a different conversation. Then it's a totally different conversation about the game. That's it in my eyes.
I don't know. I feel I respectfully disagree with you because this is a homebrew game club. We're just three dudes having fun, playing games, getting together and talking about them. And there's no reason why the three of us can't play them in different ways and talk about our experiences with that. I don't have the time or the patience to play through it without save states, especially this one, because I know from my past experience with Puzzler games that they, oh my God, I get so frustrated so fast. So I just went into this one on this second playthrough, immediately save states. And that's how I played it. And, you know, for better or worse.
But it was your second playthrough.
Because the first time I played through it, I did try without. And this might be, like, your, to your point, this is the game that maybe caused me to embrace using save states.
Well, but that is my point. That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. So the first time that you played this game, it sounds like you had a similar experience to what I did.
I did. But also from that going forward, every other game we've played, I've used save states. Like, that's just the way that it is, because, you know, okay, if I was a millionaire and I didn't have to work and I had nothing to do but play video games all day, then maybe I would go through it and, you know, give it a shot. But as it is right now, I don't okay, have that luxury. But, you know, I do enjoy playing the games.
Yeah. And so I think it's left to me to fully justify the save state approach.
Maybe.
Because what you're saying, Nick, is that the order does matter. Like, if I had played it with save states first and then played it without save states, that's not as valid as playing it without save states and then going and doing the save states.
Well, and I'm also just talking about, like, the time. You know, if you want to play through the game twice, that's fine. But, you know, I'm if you're only going to play through it once and it's sure, with save states, then I feel like you haven't had the experience of playing the game.
So I guess I will play through the game the first time I'm playing it, right? Until I hit a thing that's really frustrating. And I might try that frustrating thing like two, maybe three times. But then I'm going to use a save state.
Okay.
And I think maybe it's just the threshold there, right? Like, I'm not going to say, like, I'm going to finish the first world without a save state, or I'm going to... Except, Xenocrisis was a little bit of an exception where I was like, can I do the first world with save states? And that was actually a waste of time. But then, because there's some games we've discovered, like, save states are not really even beneficial. They kind of just get in your way.
True.
So I think it's just like, I do have a low threshold. I think that's probably my sin in this, is that, like, I will say after like three or maybe even two attempts, if I'm like, yeah, that's really frustrating, I'm just going to go straight to the save state and use that to at least like help me over the hump. And I try to keep that in mind when I'm giving my point of view. But ultimately, I don't think I've ever had a more negative view of a game by using save states. So I think I think it's safe to say that whatever the listener is hearing from my opinion, it's maybe a little inflated. Maybe I'm enjoying it too much, but I don't think it causes me to ever dismiss or not like a game. I'm unlikely to use save states and find that gives me a lower opinion of the game. So I think maybe it's just like Connor's opinion is going to be pretty, like, you know,
okay,
take it as like a little bit inflated.
Well, and look, I use save states on Xenocrisis after like 20 hours, right? I mean, like, I had a goal in mind, which was I was going to be easy mode with continues, which seems like, you know,
seems like a reasonable,
you know, kind of like the first tier of here's, you know, playing that game. And I still couldn't fucking get that far.
Right. You know what you should have used? Should have used some cheat codes.
Well, you know, after listening to the podcast and the edit, I realized that I could use cheat codes because apparently you guys talked about that while I was out of the room.
I did. I'm sorry, dude. I didn't want to like exclude you, but I did feel a little embarrassed. I will be honest. I felt a little embarrassed about admitting to using cheat codes.
Why?
Well, but here's my thing.
You get railed on for using save states. You're not going to talk about using cheat codes.
Right. But the cheat codes were put in the game by the game designer. So, I mean, like, they're clearly there, right?
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they're meant to be there. You know, it's kind of like, I've said this before, but I mean, like, nobody would remember Contra if it didn't have the 30 lives code.
Yes.
Because everybody would have played it and they would have gotten their ass kicked and then they would have just thrown it on the other pile of their NES games and probably not gone back to it, you know?
That is true.
Whereas you've got that 30 lives code, and if you've got two people and one of them has no idea how to play the game, like they can still like hold their own because they got, you know, you between the three continues, they've got 90 lives.
And they can steal your lives too if you're playing two player.
That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, so that might clarify, I hope, my point of view on save states and whatnot. Like, I don't mind using them. It's just like, just don't, I'm just asking that you guys come into this, at least try it without the save states. At least try it the way the game was made. Or, you know, maybe it doesn't even fucking matter. If you're listening at home and you're like, I don't fucking care, then you know what? Just jump on Discord and let us know. Like, Nick, I don't fucking care.
That's what I was going to say. I want to hear more from the Discord on this.
I think as long as people know that at least one of us is playing it the way I am, is somebody who isn't a fucking cheating piece of shit. Here's my perspective, all right? Which is the game is fucking hard. God damn it. You know, that kind of thing. So, yeah. Anyway, Alfonso's Arctic Adventure. So this is a game for the NES. Yeah, all right. So getting back to this game. So yeah, as I said, there are multiple versions of the game out there. So if you're playing this game now, here's how the change that this game, when you don't take away the goldfish, okay, and you give everybody that prompt when you quit the level, right? Here's how that totally changed my experience playing this game. So the first time through, as I said, I got frustrated all to hell because the game is really hard. It's hard in a way that I'm going to bring this back to a game that I mention a lot, which is Celeste. So take a drink at home if you're playing along. It's our Celeste trope. Nick mentioned Celeste. But there are parts in this game where you will die within the first 5 seconds of the level. If you're just standing there, you will get hit in the head by a bird. Yeah. Will shit on your head and you will die. Okay,
yeah, this is like level 5.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this will happen like immediately. You will die, and so it is very easy. There are parts of this game, like when I got to the level, like world episode 5. Okay, I was trying to get all these goldfish. There are levels in that episode 5 where I died 50 times. I counted 50 times trying to get through the level and get all the gold, like get the goldfish. 50. Okay. Like that's absurd.
Yeah.
You know, but it was fine after this update because there's no real penalty for death anymore. You have lives and you have continues, but there's really no point to them anymore. By taking away the you know, where it resets your goldfish thing, it totally takes away the penalty for death. You just die and that's it. I wish it had just taken away the lives, just taken it away entirely. What this did is that it allowed me to just play the game and explore. Because the other thing that it does is that it gives you that retry prompt. So that indicates, sometimes I would get the goldfish in a level and then I get a retry prompt and I'd be like, oh, there's a secret passage in this level that I didn't find. That's cool. And so I would go back in, right? And I'd start looking for it. And because there's no penalty to death now, I didn't care about exploring. And I would go, like, I wonder what just happens when I jump over to this side of the screen. And it's like, oh, I'll just fall straight into the water and die. Well, you know what? Who cares? Because there's no penalty for death anymore.
Right.
Right? And so I would just play the same level 50 times. And it's like, you know what? I don't even need save states anymore. Because that's been taken away. Like, there's no penalty to death. It would be like playing Celeste with save states. It would be stupid. There's no point to that.
I feel like I wish I had played that new version of the game. Because especially with you finish it and you get the retry prompt and it lets you know that you missed something. But then again, there are also moments in this game where I was more concerned about just moving on to the next level rather than getting the goldfish.
Sure.
It's almost like when you're playing, like, let's say Angry Birds or Candy Crush or whatever, and you finish a level and you don't get the 3 stars. I'm not going back and redoing that level just to get the 3 stars. I'm just like moving on to the next thing, especially when I'm trying to get through all 6 worlds and like try to beat the game. You know,
right,
it's like sometimes getting to the next level for me is more important than finding everything, I guess.
Well, that's how I played the first time through because the game is so goddamn hard.
Yeah.
And I knew I was never going to get those goldfish because in order to get the goldfish, you would have to play through the entire game without continuing. Woof. So like those levels where you die 50 times, like you'd have to just ace that the first time through because you don't have 50 lives.
Right.
Every time you get a goldfish, it gives you an extra life. So you could theoretically have an extra 95 lives. But I mean, like, you're going to blow them all on like one level. So like, what's the point? So I didn't bother the first time through. Or you can use save states like a fucking cheater. But yeah, I mean, like that would be the other way to do it. But no, I mean, by not having a penalty for death, I suddenly engaged it in a much more casual way. I didn't feel like that goal was so out of reach. And because it wasn't out of reach, I decided to go for it. And I had a great fucking time. I really enjoyed this game in a way I did not the first time through. This game pissed me off and I did not like it. Okay. That was my rant about the previous version of this game. That pretty much covered everything that I had here in this what doesn't work section. So I guess we just knock that out. Is there anything that you guys thought didn't work about this game?
Gosh, you know, I've said it before about these puzzler games, and that playing it on a console is just not my jam. I think I said it about Witch and Wiz too. I would much rather play it on something portable. You know, if I had this on the Game Boy and I could keep the Game Boy in my pocket and, you know, take it out like you guys were talking about on the Ruby and Rusty episode, you could just play a couple of levels and then put it away and go back to your life, come back to it, you know, rather than having to sit down and just try to grind through a whole bunch of levels in one sitting, and then saving the game and then moving on. That's the one thing that didn't really work for me. It was the same problem I had with Witch and Wiz, and that's, you know, just not being able to, I feeling like I need to sit down and block out 2 hours of time to go through this thing instead of just doing it a little bit here and there.
Connor, you're nodding your head. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, well, I definitely enjoy this kind of game in a different way. I think that I can dip in and out. I don't feel it needs to be portable, but totally understand how Bart would prefer that. I guess I'm just thinking, like, the nitpicky things, the things I think don't work for it are kind of nitpicky. It's things like the enemies bounce. I don't like bouncy enemies, you know, like that's just something I think is really annoying. And I don't really think it's, you know, it's something that's very difficult to skill up and get better at because the chances of you hitting one of these characters that's bouncing while you're jumping over them is really high. And then like the boss fights, I really didn't enjoy the boss fights, if I'm being honest.
You didn't? Really?
I didn't enjoy the boss fights. I don't like boss fights. I just don't like the idea that there's like this one character that's going to kill you 50 times. Like that's not cool. Oh,
I thought they were really good.
I just, as a start, like I don't think boss fights are a lot of fun. And so you have to convince me, like the first boss fight's kind of interesting because you can do it quick. That's good. But I was not good at boss fights. So that's the yuck boss fight at the end. I thought that was very difficult. It actually took me a long time to figure out how to affect that boss. I didn't actually know how to hurt that boss for some time. So I think the parts that are nitpicky for me are invariant to save states. It's just the way the game is.
Yeah, if you don't like bouncy enemies, you are not going to like the final boss of this game. Because it is literally constructed of bouncy enemies.
Yeah. It's like, so, I just know. I, that was like a thing that I don't really go for.
You know, now that you brought that up, I will confess, I did not beat the game the first time through without save states. I literally could not.
You hypocrite.
What?
I don't believe it.
I quit the podcast.
That's it.
I played, it was the very last level before you get to the final boss. I played it on my Switch for 30 minutes straight.
Wow.
30 minutes straight. And I could not beat that level. And it got to the point where I literally just did not want to play the game anymore. And I'm like, if I'm going to finish this game, I have to use save states. So that's where I put it on an emulator on my computer.
Swallowed your pride.
No, I mean, like, I literally couldn't beat the game anymore. This is exactly what I'm talking about. You know, I did it the way that I'm saying. Like, if you get to a point where you can't play the game anymore, then sure, use save states. That's what I did. And that is the only way that I beat the game. Now, the second time through, after the update, I beat the game on my Switch I beat it straight. And I played that final boss for 30 minutes. And I did finally beat it. I died about 50 times. But I did get through it. And it was one of those things where you just play it over and over again. And then like just suddenly everything just clicks and you finish. And it's just like, Jesus Christ, I did it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if I could do it again. It might take me another 30 minutes, but God damn it, I fucking did it. So, and I really felt like I had, I felt like, you know, I'd just beaten Castlevania or something. I mean, it was, I was proud of myself. I worked for that fucking shit. I just want to say about the portability thing. There is a console called a Switch. And I don't know if you've seen one of these before, but you can play the game on a Switch. And it makes it portable.
Yeah. So. Not a fan of the Switch. We need to talk about the ending of this game because I got things to say.
You do. Okay, so I tell you what, let's take a little music break. Or you know what? Maybe we should do that now. Maybe we do the spoiler now and so people can skip forward to the music. When you hear the music, stop skipping. How about that?
There you go.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. Spoiler alert. We're going to talk about the end of this game. What happens at the end of the game? Bart, go for it.
All right. So here's... it kind of made me giggle a little bit when you get to the end of the game and it's like, oh, no, Bob's not here. You did all of this for nothing, right? And then...
I love it.
But then she's like, oh, but no, you didn't because you... You stopped him from like eating the sun or whatever the hell he said he was going to do once. Like,
yeah,
so you show up,
right?
You show up and he's like, no, Bob's not here, but thanks for all the fish. These fish will allow me to assume my final form. And now I'm going to kill everybody. Right. So here's what I think. It said you did all this for nothing. So think about it this way. This reminds me of that. Have you guys heard of that trope where they say that like Indiana Jones has zero effect on the outcome of Raiders of the Lost Ark? Because if he had never even left his house, the Nazis still would have found the Ark of the Covenant. They would have taken it to the place. They would have opened it and then they would have all died. Like
their faces would have melted. Right.
Yeah. Indiana Jones has. So if Alfonso had just stayed home, eventually he would have seen Bob because Bob's just somewhere around the house. He would not have given enough fish for what's the guy's name?
Yuck.
The last guy?
Yuck.
Yuck. He wouldn't have given Yuck enough fish to turn into Mr. Yuck or whatever his final form was.
Perfect Yuck.
Yeah, perfect Yuck. That's it. And so like literally he could have stayed home and just avoided all of this headache. That was the one part about this whole ending that made me laugh. Because it reminded me.
Yeah, but the real adventure is the friends that you make along the way, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess.
True. The real adventure is the fish you ate along the way. I liked it. Yeah, it's so dumb. It is exactly like the humor from the cartoon.
True.
Totally.
What would have been really cool is if there was like a secret in the game where if you just started on the very first level, the very first world, and just stood there and did nothing, after like 5 minutes, Bob would just walk onto the screen and you'd be like, hey, well, let's go eat fish. And then like, that's the end of that's like the secret ending to the game. That would have been really cool.
I like that idea. All right. Okay. So we're going to cut to a music break here. We will come back and have our final thoughts on Alfonso's Arctic adventure.
Welcome back to Alfonso's Arctic Adventure, where you can play as one of four characters, Pokey, Stompy, Stabby, or Fatty. I played this game so much that that's the nicknames I gave for those characters. Oh, good. I get to play with Stabby this time. Are you going to talk about the two-player mode? Did you actually... Have you played the two-player mode? Because I haven't, because I don't have somebody else to play with here at the house.
I played it... I think I guess I played it against a computer, or no, maybe it's like two-player or something like that. So yeah, the two-player... There's a two-player melee mode, which was basically... It was another entry into that 2017 NESDEV competition. And it takes the characters from this game, and you can use them in a... It's like a Smash Brothers melee mode.
Oh, right? Okay.
So you're on like a little platform and you're hitting each other and stuff. I haven't played it in a long time. I just played it to check it out. But it's interesting to me because it kind of speaks back to a problem that I had my first time through this game, which is that the characters control like they are tools to use in a puzzle game, right?
Right, right.
That's kind of what they're made for. But I feel like there's a lot of places in this game where you're asked to use them as though this were an action platformer. Like there are screens where you'll just be standing there and you'll have like five enemies coming at your head. You know, you got the bird flying around and it's shitting on you. And then you got one of those little bouncy yuck guys and, or something, or, you know, the sandwich is coming at you, the sandwich with the ears. Right. And then you'll have a penguin run around. It's like, Jesus, the flying nose. And you can't even stop and think about what the hell you're doing, you know? Like, there are times like that where this game just gets really overwhelming. And I feel like you are made to use these puzzle game characters in, like, an action platformery kind of way. And I don't know. It worked better the second time through when the deaths didn't matter. But the first time through, my God, I found that frustrating as hell. You give me a shovel and you ask me to, like, you know, hammer in a nail with it. It's like, okay, I can do that, but that's not what this thing is. You know, it feels like that's not what this was made for. I don't know. It feels awkward. But one thing I did want to say about this game. So I played a little bit of Eskimo Bob, which is the first game in the series. That is a really interesting comparison. I wanted to play through that whole game for this podcast, but then I decided to do my completionist run, so I didn't get that far. I played through maybe the first 20 levels of Eskimo Bob, though. And I think it's really interesting to play that and this and see how small changes to gameplay will affect your entire experience of the game, which I think is true with the goldfish thing and retrying levels and stuff. But if you play Eskimo Bob, there are it has graphics that are, you know, they look like this, but they're like prototype versions. You know, they're not as crisp, they're not as styled. Bob plays like Magnus does in this game, but he can't attack at all. Whereas Magnus can do like the down punch on enemies. Bob can't do that. So you just have Alfonso is your attack, right? Because he's the only character that can't attack. You can only switch between those two characters, Alfonso and Bob. And a change that is made in that game that makes it play totally different. One change, okay? The change is enemies do not respawn.
No.
So what happens then is that on a lot of the levels, you've got enemies all over the place. You get Alfonso. Alfonso comes in with the stick and just clears out the level. He's just poking everybody, poke, poke, poke. And then you're done. And then you go select Bob, who has the high jump and you know, he can break through the floor. And you go solve the level, which is what happens is it makes it much more focused on puzzles. It feels like more of a puzzle game than this game is. And I thought it was interesting how you make that one change and suddenly it just totally changes the whole experience of the game. It changes the feel.
So I've never played the Eskimo Bob game, but I will be honest, I had thought a lot about whether to give feedback about whether the enemies respawning was good or bad.
It felt like a ticking clock.
Yeah.
I thought about that a lot because that's an extremely important choice, right? You're talking about playing the game as the developer intended. You don't need to be using save states or not using save states to know that was a very intentional choice.
Yes.
And they respawn pretty quickly.
They do, right?
They respawn pretty quickly in this game.
Well, and that's one of the things my first time through, anytime I would get Fenwood, I would be like, fucking yes. Because he's
invincible, basically. Yeah,
at least in the first half of the game, he's indestructible. And so, like, as soon as you get him, then it doesn't matter how many enemies there are, because, you know, there's like, there's stuff coming at you and he just bounces right off of him. And for the first time, I could just stop and think about what I was doing. It dialed down the chaos, you know, and I could just look around the level and kind of get a good look at it. And there would be stuff bouncing off me and I'd be like, whatever. And then, of course, the game takes that away from you.
Right.
When he comes up against enemies that can kill him.
Sure.
Right.
You know,
right.
And so so in my notes from a year ago, I wrote down, here's what I want. An easy mode where enemies do not respawn. That's all I wanted. That's what I was asking for. And then I played Eskimo Bob and they don't respawn. And I was like, holy fuck, this is it. This is what I wanted. A real puzzle game where I don't have to deal with these goddamn enemies all the time. I can just take a few out. Well, and then I can
this is it. It's like,
look at what I'm
and
doing.
This is why I didn't give it as feedback, positive or negative, until you brought it up, because I believe it was a conscious choice by the developer to make the enemies part of the puzzle.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it totally is. There's a few levels that you can't beat.
That they decided that's it.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, there are a few levels that you can't beat unless you, like, you know, pogo stick off of an enemy or something.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And so you could argue that the save state thing makes me more understanding of this choice, because I definitely get as frustrated with them, because there's a lot of chaos, like you said, like there's a lot of activity going on in some of these levels. It can get very frustrating. But I always thought that, like, well, look, if I could just clear the level and then do the puzzles, that would be two games that I'm playing in one. One is the, like, action part, and then there's the puzzle part. But if you want to have it as, like, actually integrated, you have to have a respawn mechanic for those two ideas to be integrated. Otherwise, they are completely separate ideas that you're playing one step after the other.
Well, and Eskimo Bob does feel a little like that. Yeah, they're not through the whole game, but there are a lot of levels that I played where it did feel like, okay, here's phase one where I kill everything, and here's phase two where I solve the puzzle. You know, it did feel that way a lot.
And I think that's... It definitely makes it harder. I'm not going to joke around. Like, it makes the game harder because you have to deal with the two things at the same time and it's more chaotic. But at the same time, like, I think to your point about the Fenwood thing, like, they give you the chance to kind of not feel so chaotic in the first few worlds. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of ramp it up to be like, there's no escape. You got to just love the chaos.
Sure.
And I think they arguably ramp it up a little too high by the last levels. I think of the night enemy. And how that was just, like, really hard for me to time with some of the kind of jumps and stuff.
Right.
Is that the one that you stab that turns into concrete?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was just really hard.
How about the fucking narwhals, guys? Narwhals.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, things like that, arguably they took it too far. But at the same time, I felt like I had to... But yeah, I had to think of it like, okay, they chose to, like, have it as an integrated experience and try to rate it on that, because yeah, it could be a two-phase game otherwise.
Yeah. Okay. Do you guys have anything else you want to say before we kind of wrap it up? I have a couple of comments from Discord. Raft or not comments, there sure are a lot of fish. That's correct.
That is correct.
That is absolutely true.
Matt Houston, take a drink. Matt Houston, everybody. Take a drink.
Take a drink.
There it is.
Matt Houston had some comments that were interesting to me. He talked about a lot of the same stuff that we did. And he played on the cartridge. So he also played the original version of the game. And what's funny is that a lot of his notes look exactly like the stuff that I wrote down a year ago.
I'm sorry. You didn't know that I just stole all of his ideas for this?
Did you steal all of his ideas?
I just stole it.
All right. Well, folks, thanks to Matt Houston for supplying Connor with his notes on this podcast. So,
yes.
But no, he talked about he was like, man, I wish the respawning took a little bit longer. What is he looking at? He was like, I exited a few levels by accident before finding the golden fish, and I wasn't able to go back. Yeah, and he also talked about, wouldn't it be nice if there was an easy mode where all non-puzzle related enemies are removed. See, that's what I'm talking about. Maybe like with respawns, except for the enemies that you like need to solve the puzzle. Maybe there's an easy mode or a cheat code, right? Where you can turn off enemy respawns. Maybe that's a Game Genie code. maybe you can find a Game Genie code that turns off the respawning. But yeah, it's just, yeah, he's like, there's just too much repetition and frustration. Yeah, and he's right. So, but yeah, so I would encourage anybody who had the Matt Houston experience here, who played this game, the original version, try it again, maybe. Try again. Try the new version. I'm kind of like, I have this game on the cart, and I'm kind of wishing I had some way to reflash it with the new ROM. I'm not even kidding. Because I don't really want to play the old version of the game anymore. So, if you're out there and you're listening to this and you want to reflash my cart for me, that would be, I would totally pay somebody to do that. So, but yeah, anyway. Okay, so, I think that's all we have to say about Alfonso's Arctic Adventure. Is that right?
Yes, I agree.
Okay. So, yeah, my final verdict. I like it now. I think it's fun. Go pick it up. I don't know. You pick up the cart, pick up maybe the other ROM version and try that too. But it's, you know, on Switch, I had a great time.
So. I bought it on Itch. I think it was worth the money. I think it's a good game. Glad to play it.
Well, here's the thing, folks. Between Eskimo Bob and Alfonso's Arctic Adventure, you can get both of these NES ROMs, current versions, okay, brand new versions, on Itch for a total of a combined $8. I think anybody can get $8 of fun out of those two games. So I'm just, at that price point, this is an unquestionable recommend. So go play them. All right. You know, I have something. Did you guys see, I sent you guys photos of my new games, right?
Yes, I did.
Yes.
See
that. I have brand new Dreamcast indie games. So, you know, I got this Dreamcast for, it was my little brother's Dreamcast from like 2001 or whatever. And we found it in my mom's attic and he doesn't want it anymore. He's like, yeah, I can't get the thing to work anymore. So I fixed it up and I got it to work now. And now it's my goddamn Dreamcast. And so I got some new homebrew games for it, published by Wave Game Studios out of the UK. And I'm really looking forward to checking those out. And so expect those to come up on a future podcast. I got Flea, which is, you know, we've talked about Flea many times. I think that's probably on our drinking game. Yeah, take a drink. I talked about Flea. We've got the Dreamcast version of Flea. I'm looking forward to checking that out. I've got a game called Xenocider. It's an on-rails shooter. And then I got another game called Intrepid Izzy, which is a platformer. But those all look really good. There's some really fantastic, interesting-looking Dreamcast homebrew out there. So
Xenocider was actually really interesting to me because that's a 3D game. Like, that's a fully, like, polygonal,
yes,
3D game. And for me, like, going from 2D to 3D is a huge leap when it comes to homebrew.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard. It's just straight hard. So, like, it's just really interesting to see that there's some more kind of polygonal 3D kind of gaming on that homebrew scene. And I would love to see more of that kind of develop.
I cannot wait to talk about that game. That looks so fucking interesting. Another game I got, I didn't send you guys, but I put it on Discord. It's a Switch game and it's called Stormwind. There's been a kind of modern port of this released called Stormwind EX, but this is a shooter. It's a shoot 'em up, and it was made for Dreamcast, and it is, as far as I can tell, regarded as arguably the highest quality homebrew indie game to ever come out on Dreamcast. So I've played a little bit of the version that's on Switch, and it's the same version that you can find on Steam and wherever, and it is a really good shooter. It is really good. It looks fantastic. It's really great to look at.
Awesome.
So I'm really looking for, I don't know why, but man, I got so into this Dreamcast stuff over the last couple of weeks. I've been so into it. I've like been binging podcasts. There's a Dreamcast Junkyard has a podcast called the Dreamcast. Is it Dream? No, is it?
It should be if it's not.
It can't fucking be called the Dreamcast. Okay. It is called the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod.
Okay.
That's a really good podcast, and they have some good conversation with like Wave Game Studios, who are the publishers of these games that I got, and they look into a lot of modern indies, as well as like old school stuff. Because I didn't know anything about the console, so I needed to do homework just on the relevance of the console because I'd never played it before. So we have talked last podcast. We talked about doing So I started up an Ask the Podcast section of the Discord, where people can just shoot us questions about different things that they want to hear us talk about. And the initial response I got was everybody just wanted to talk about St. Louis food for some reason. So this podcast is Bart and I are in St. Louis, Missouri. Connor used to be here. St. Louis is a Midwestern city, has its own distinct cuisine. Every Midwestern city, I think, has its own strange traditional kind of dishes. I guess you think about like Philadelphia with its cheesesteaks, right?
So, no, I think it's a good point to start with like Philadelphia cheesesteaks, right? Because St. Louis has, first of all, its own cheese, which I have never seen outside of St. Louis, which is called, anybody want to jump in and tell me what it is?
Provel.
Yep.
Provel, baby.
Right. What is Provel? What is Provel, really?
What is Provel?
As a person who's lactose intolerant and can't really eat it, I think it's a cross between provolone and hell.
Close. It's actually a combination of, according to the Wikipedia page, provolone, cheddar, and Swiss.
Mm, okay.
Cheddar, Swiss, and provolone. Yeah. Okay. It is a processed cheese.
It's highly processed.
Yes.
Yes. Highly processed. So this was this made to go on pizza? Was that what this is made for?
It's the traditional topping for St. Louis pizza, I believe. It's supposed to have a low melting point. That's like the benefit of it.
Okay.
Okay.
But like, first of all, we not only have our own style of pizza, we have our own cheese to put on our own pizza. So like, I think that does take it into another level, right? Like, there's no Philadelphia cheese. There's just Philadelphia cheesesteak.
Cream cheese.
Well, cream cheese, but that's a brand. That's not like a... cheese is cream cheese.
Right.
Would you ever have a Philadelphia cheesesteak with Philadelphia cheese? I would question that.
I don't know. You never know. It might be good.
Maybe I should try that.
It's like Mitch Hedberg talking about the banana bread pastrami cream cheese sandwich.
So Provel, you can only find it around St. Louis. Like you can find it in every grocery store in St. Louis, but once you get out of St. Louis, I don't think you can really find it anywhere.
Kind of like a pork steak.
Like a pork steak. Pork steaks are the business.
You folks out there that don't know what a pork steak is, it is, you get a pork butt that has a bone in it, like a picnic roast. If you can find a butcher that will take that and slice it into steaks where there's a piece of the bone in every single steak, and then you take that and you season it with garlic and salt and pepper and paprika and a little bit, and then throw that on the grill and grill it like you were grilling just a steak. Slather barbecue sauce all over it. It is fan-fucking-tastic. And I grew up with it because Nick and I grew up 100 miles south of St. Louis, so that made it.
It's close enough. St. Louis, like, cultural scope area.
When I talk about pork steaks with people that have they're from nowhere near this area, they're like, what are you talking about? Like, I was at a buddy's house in Los Angeles, and he'd never heard of it. So we went to a butcher. I had them get the picnic roast. I had him slice it, and I made pork steaks for him. And he was like, holy shit, this is life-changing. And I was like, yeah, this really needs to be everywhere.
The only thing I'll say about pork steaks that was really interesting for me, you talk to anybody in St. Louis, like, oh, like, have you had a pork steak? Of course, everyone loves pork steaks.
Yeah.
I never found one restaurant in the St. Louis area that served pork steaks. You could go to Butcher's, everyone knew it. Really?
Oh, okay. Butcher's.
Yeah, right. Butcher's, yeah, but I like a restaurant?
Restaurants. Yeah.
Okay. There's a couple like low rent barbecue joints that aren't like known for their you can look at like somebody like Pappy's or Bogart's or whatever that's like famous for their barbecue. But then you go to the little barbecue joint in the side town that's not super famous for St. Louis barbecue.
Right.
They'll have a pork steak.
Yes.
It might be like, it's like a regional novelty almost.
And it's something that I think
fancy places don't have it.
Yeah, but, it's the thing that you grill at home. You know, I'm not going to buy a grilled hot dog. Let's be honest,
it's a cheaper cut of pork.
Oh, it's very cheap.
Oh yeah, it totally is. Well, and I think that way you can really overcook them. If you overcook them, it's like eating a piece of leather or something.
Shoe leather, for sure.
Yeah, it sucks, right? Because it's just a big thick wad of pork, right?
Yeah, so good.
Yeah, it is.
Oh man.
Gooey butter cake, I think, is another thing that I really like that you can get in every grocery store here. But when you get out of the area, you just... That's true. So gooey butter cake is just a type of cake.
It's about as taste. It tastes pretty much like what it sounds like. It's pretty clear.
It is like it is basically a stick of butter with a little bit of cake mixed in.
Yeah,
it's almost like kind of what it tastes like.
Lots of sugar.
Custard pie almost with powdered sugar pie, on right. top.
Yeah.
Oh well, frozen custard. We have to talk about frozen custard. I don't know. Frozen custard's all right.
It's overrated for me. I'd rather have frozen yogurt, but hey, what are you going to do? This is also coming from a person that's mildly lactose intolerant. So a lot of the stuff that's really famous in St. Louis, I like, but I can't eat very regularly. Like Emo's Pizza is what people think of when they think of St. Louis.
Yeah, the question that we got was, what is the best pizza in St. Louis? So Emo's is the one that everybody thinks about as the distinctive St. Louis style pizza, right?
Right.
Bart, do you want to describe Emo's?
It's cheese and crackers.
Cheese and crackers.
So here's what I always said. Emo's Pizza is extremely thin crust pizza that is topped with Provel cheese that melts exquisitely. And then they do have the best toppings on top of this thing. Like if you get bacon on their pizza, there's a half a slice of bacon on the pizza, not just bacon bits. Now, for years, I always said Emo's Pizza is good. But if I'm craving pizza and I go have Emo's, when I walk out of there, I'm still craving pizza because it's not pizza.
It's not right? really going to scratch that itch.
It doesn't scratch the itch, but it's fucking delicious. I love it. Mm. Now, I'm getting to the point now where because of the Provel cheese, I can't have it as much as I would like, which is a real shame. And I also, because of my pocketbook, I can't have it as much as I like. Because if you're part of the Emo's Corporation and you're listening, lower your fucking prices. Literally, a large one-topping pizza is like $24. It should not be that expensive.
At Emo's?
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I took my kids and my wife to Emo's 2 weeks ago. We got an order of chicken wings. We got 2 one-topping pizzas and 4 sodas, and it was like $78.
At fucking Emo's?
Yeah, it's
Jesus Christ.
So what fucking expensive right now. It's
like
ridiculous.
A millimeter thick crust.
Yeah.
Jesus. Oh, God.
If you want to get full.
Maybe there's a global Provel shortage. Maybe that's what's happening.
It's just
maybe the Russians have cut off our supply of Provel. That's what's happening.
Perhaps. But when we talk about the best pizza in St. Louis, does it have to be St. Louis style pizza? Because I don't care.
I just want to pitch in with my, I'm not a fan of Emo's. I don't like it. I really like Provel on anything but a pizza. Like it's great on a sandwich. Like on a sandwich, cheese really should be like food glue. Like it should hold everything together.
Sure.
Provel is perfect for that. It has melted Provel is glue. It's basically, it has the consistency of glue. But like, you know, if I go to Gioia's and I have like a hot Italian sandwich, I get Provel on there.
Gioia's
and it's
so good.
Fucking, oh my God, Gioia. You want to talk about best sandwich in St. Louis?
I was thinking about that. No, I think Gioia's is the best food in St. Louis, hands down. If you go in there and get
best
their
food. Yeah, you know what?
I think so.
I'm going to agree with that. I think best meal I've ever had. Hot Italian at Gioia's.
The hot Italian with hot salami and roast beef. This is how I get it.
And on the garlic cheese bread.
Garlic cheese bread. You got to have the garlic bread.
First of all, you can get this sandwich on fucking garlic bread.
Garlic cheese bread with Provel on the garlic cheese bread.
Yes. And I get onions, pickles, and hot jardiniere with a little bit of horseradish mayo. And it is hands down, the best sandwich I've ever had in my life. And there's probably nothing in St. Louis that I would rather eat than a hot Gioia's sandwich. Oh my
dude, God. I want to go fucking eat that right now.
I
could eat that anytime. You know, it's pretty bad for you. So I only like one a year. But I mean it's terrible for you. But yeah. So here's my thing with the Emo's. Okay. It's like if you've never been to St. Louis and you wanna have an Emo's style pizza. Okay. I would get some Ritz crackers and slather some ketchup on top. And then maybe like a thin slice of what? Like Velveeta?
Easy cheese,
Velveeta, something like that. Put it in your oven just long enough for the Velveeta to like plasticize. And then take a nice big bite. And that is basically Emo's Pizza. Well, I mean, we had an Emo's Pizza in our hometown. And I can say anybody, if I went over to a sleepover at somebody's house when I was in like second grade, right? And their parents had got Emo's Pizza, I would cry. That's how much I hated Emo's Pizza.
It
was always the worst pizza. Oh, you know, and I should say when you're eating St. Louis style pizza, it is cut into like party style
squares.
I was going to mention this. It's cut like what do you call it? Party style.
Bar style, I think, is what it's called.
It's cut like into a chessboard.
Yes. Squares.
It is a circular pizza. A circular pizza, but cut into squares. Right.
Yes.
Now, so this is something I think St. Louis just kind of is a little weird about, because that's not how you're supposed to slice a pizza. Like, I'm sorry, that's just not right. Like,
well, you get tons of tiny pieces of crust, others that have no crust at all.
It's so much shit from the people that grew up in St. Louis for saying this. Because honestly, I grew up 100 miles south of here, which is close enough, I think. Because I mean, I grew up with pork steaks and I grew up with Emo's Pizza. The one thing that I don't understand to this day, and I will never order it unless somebody else wants to, is toasted ravioli.
No.
I don't care for it.
Okay, you're really? Wrong there. No, you're wrong.
You're so wrong there. No. Seriously.
Toasted ravs are the business.
T-ravs, man. Fucking T-ravs.
Toasted ravs are probably my favorite St. Louis cuisine. Like, go I mean,
for it. So toasted ravioli, let's describe what this is.
Like, so, yeah, I mean,
somebody describe toasted ravioli here.
Okay, so imagine you get like kind of sausage meat, like, you know, a really seasoned, really kind of dense sausage meat.
Like, and you find inside of ravioli.
No, but like, because you have ravioli that's got like a nice goat's cheese, fucking like foofy little spinach thing.
It's like Chef Boyardee meat ravioli.
We're talking like the fuck, like this is dense. Like this is like, I would say the consistency of like black pudding from like where I'm from Ireland.
Really?
Like, that kind of density.
I would say like it's kind of like pizza sausage, like an Italian sausage or something. And it's like ground into like a, you know, like a ground beef kind of texture.
But then you stuff that inside of a ravioli, right? Fine. But then you put that ravioli under the grill. Or if you're really fucking going for it, you deep fry it.
Yeah, they deep fry it. Yeah.
And that's when it really transcends. That's when you're like, oh, this ravioli isn't a ravioli anymore. It's become something else.
You serve it with a little cup of marinara sauce that is a little bit
just for
spicy.
Dipping. Just for a little dip.
Just a little bit. Yes.
I understand it. I will say I understand the appeal of it, but it's not something that I ever think about ordering. I think
you just got to go to where it's well executed. This I've had poorly executed. Yeah.
There's a place called Circa out in De Pere that they do it inside of wonton shells.
Oh Lord. It's
really good. I would try that with you. The other one that I've had that's fantastic is Salt and Smoke.
They put their brisket in there, don't they? Burn ends.
It is burnt ends.
I have had
that
one.
So it's like the best of both worlds. It is Kansas City and St. Louis in a single dish. And that is an excellent fucking T-Rav.
They should sell those in Jeff City.
They should.
Because Jeff City's halfway between
Columbia.
Good comes out of Jeff City.
You could sell a shit ton of those in Columbia.
That's true.
Yeah.
I just, it's, like I said.
Yeah, you know what? Just steer clear of Jeff City.
It's not that I don't like the toasted Rav. It's just typically, when there's toasted ravioli on a menu for an appetizer, there's also chicken wings, and I will go to chicken wings 1,000% of the time over the toasted ravioli.
Meh.
I could be in a T-Ravs mood. I don't know. Chicken wings are nice, but
I understand.
This is great. This is the most Missouri conversation I think I've ever had.
Yeah, I'm so glad nobody I know listens to this podcast. I guess maybe I'll find out if there are people.
Nobody
that are
local
secretly
listens to this podcast. Yeah. Well, no, I think there's two or three people that might live around here.
Listening to this podcast in the St. Louis area, I will hear about it. And also, can I just say it before you go on? There's a good chance that Connor is literally the only person in London talking about toasted ravioli right now. So there's that.
You should. I bet there's a Facebook group for London T-Rav fans. Yes. There's probably somebody in London with a secret stash of Provel.
Right. St. Louis transplants.
Yeah, that's what it is. Transplants in London. Oh, man.
Oh, Lord.
No, Nathan Tolbert, I'm sure, listened to us. He's in Illinois.
That's
true. He's been here enough times. Okay, so the question was, favorite St. Louis pizza?
All right.
If it has to be St. Louis style, let's take it that way. Because it was an open-ended question. So let's answer this two ways. What is your favorite St. Louis style pizza? And then what is your favorite pizza in St. Louis?
My favorite St. Louis style pizza is at a place called Narrow Gauge Brewing, which is also in the same building.
I have not been there yet. I got to meet you there sometime.
Cugino's. It's on North Lindbergh. They are basically they make their beer, and then they partnered up with an Italian restaurant that sells. They have that's an appetizer right. that is like a stuffed meatball that's to die for. But their pizza, I think it's called like the Big Dave or whatever the name is. It's like an all meat pizza, and it's fantastic. It is a St. Louis style pizza, I believe. It is cut into squares. It has so many wonderful toppings on it. That pizza is unbelievable. That is the best St. Louis style pizza in St. Louis. And my favorite pizza in St. Louis, hands down, is the same fucking pizza. That might be the best pizza I've ever had. No joke.
And you just threw down there.
I did. Nice. It's wow. so good. And it might be because they might actually mix the Provel with mozzarella, which may not make it a traditional.
Now, okay, total I was going to say
St. Louis, yes. But I've had it. Sometimes I go in there and it tastes like it's got mozzarella in it, and sometimes it tastes like it's all Provel. It might just be according to the day and what supply they have. And, you know, the last time I went in there was like right after pandemic. So maybe they weren't getting the Provel they needed or something.
Source their Provel.
The real high quality, premium Provel.
Hey, you don't know, man. There's that Russian Provel shortage going on.
It's true.
That's right. True. Yeah. I'll go next. My favorite St. Louis style pizza is at Liliana's. It's in South County. Liliana's is a place where the guy who opened that, he ate at like 100 different restaurants that serve St. Louis style pizza. Something crazy. I guess that's like every restaurant in St. Louis that serves St. Louis style pizza. But, and he was like, what works about this and what doesn't, to derive his own St. Louis style pizza recipe. And this is another one that you were saying with the mix of cheeses. He uses a mix of Provel and mozzarella. But it is a St. Louis style pizza. Every pizza that I've ever had from there has been fantastic. And yeah, I would eat a pizza there anytime. And I would take that over Emo's any day. I would take pretty much anything over Emo's, honestly. but yeah, it's a fantastic pizza. So that's my favorite St. Louis style pizza.
Is it a bad idea, Nick, for you and I to get together and go to Narrow Gauge, have a pizza, and then go back to your place, play a bunch of video games, and then go to Liliana's and have another pizza on the same day, and then just record a little podcast about our reactions?
That sounds like
an Why would that be a bad idea? Sounds like an amazing idea.
Yeah, I think we should do that.
Yeah, we should. What we should do is we should bring an audio recorder and like live blog it. Right.
This pizza is really good.
Commentary over here for Mr. Lactose Intolerant. But my favorite pizza in town, we get to that or
Connor? Yeah, no. Go, no, you go. Tell us yours.
But, you know, my favorite pizza in town is actually a Chicago style pizza, which is my favorite kind of regional pizza. I love Chicago pizza, which some people say is not a real pizza, it's like a casserole. Okay,
I can get down with all kinds of pizza.
Betrayal. Yeah, that's my. Betrayal. I have a very very broad approach to pizza. If you call it pizza, I'm accepting of it. But yeah, I love Chicago style pizza, even though I can usually only eat like a slice or two at a time. But it's my favorite kind of pizza. I do really like Detroit. I think Detroit is kind of a sleeper hit kind of pizza. That's my cult classic pizza, but. No, my favorite kind of regional pizza is Chicago. There is a place in town called the Blackthorn Pub, and it's near South Grand, and it is a dive bar. Like, on the outside, it doesn't look that bad, but then you go inside, and man, it is a dive bar, and in the best possible way. And they have pizza there that is a Chicago-style pizza, and every single one of those pizzas probably weighs 15 goddamn pounds. It is enormous. Yeah, so I went there with a mutual friend of ours years ago, and I've got a photo of him, and he is pulling the pizza off of the tray, and he's got, you know, the little pizza scoop and stuff, and there is cheese coming off that thing just like you would see in a commercial, right?
Nice.
There is so much cheese on it. It is outrageous. And it is one of those types of pizza that you eat one slice, and you're good. You feel like you've eaten an entire, like, porterhouse steak. Like, that is how it hits you. You know,
yes.
But it is the best pizza that I have eaten in this area. It is a fantastic style of pizza, and I would recommend anybody go there if they're in the area. But it is absolutely a dive bar. I don't know if you can even take kids in there. I'm not sure, but
it's too. You know, the pizza is too extreme for kids.
Yeah. At night, if you've, you know, you're in South Grand, you've been hitting up a couple of bars and you want like a gigantic goddamn pizza, that is the place to go. You know, I want to talk about beer. All right. St. Louis style pizza. Something about it just goes fantastic with a cold Budweiser. I will say that. I do not often recommend a cold Budweiser, but, you know, you're going to have a food with a cold Budweiser. The St. Louis style pizza is not a bad pick.
Cool. Connor?
Connor is... as someone who did not grow up in this area.
I did not grow up in St. Louis. And so I will say...
I'm looking forward to hearing your perspective on this.
Yeah. I never really fell for the St. Louis pizza. I got to say, it was presented to me many times. The first job I had in the St. Louis area, they would cater it in like at least once a week. And everyone who was from the area was like, oh my God, awesome, we got emos. And everyone who was not from the area, which was predominantly me and this one guy from Peru, we would just kind of look at each other and be like, yay.
It's we all could have gotten a $2 an hour raise for the price of this pizza. Right.
Well, this was back when it was cheaper. But yeah, fair. Yeah. And so I will just say Emo's is probably my top St. Louis style pizza. And to be fair, we did get it a couple of times. It's actually very good for kids because it's just because of the party style.
Oh, it's a great kids pizza, right.
It's super easy to share. It's very easy to like mix and match. You can take the crusty bits because kids might say, oh, I only eat the crusts. Fine, you can get like a whole slice worth of crust. Like that's fine.
Sure, right. And
so that is like kind of baked in as a, you know, pun intended. A pretty good benefit. Kind of feel,
yeah, you're right. It feels like kids' food to me. You're right.
It is kind of kids' food. I think that's kind of how I feel about it. Best pizza in St. Louis? Union Loafers. This is on the other side of Van Deventer. And it's right beside AO & Co. and Olio and a bunch of other restaurants.
Yes, right. Yeah, it's right across the street.
So they will do a bacon and spinach pizza, but that is a complete misnomer. It is like pork belly. And they drizzle a bit of lemon on top, and they put a little bit of greens in just for a bit of bite, and it is so fucking good. Like, a slice of that pizza is so real. Like, you bite in, you're just, like, tasting. Because like, it's a bakery. Like, it's not, like, just some kind of random thing.
Union Loafers is primarily a bakery, right.
And they will, like, they'll bake these lovely loaves, and they do nice salads, whatever, and they do this pizza, and I swear to shit, that is a fucking solid pizza. Like, I will say right now, that slice of pizza is better than any slice I had in San Francisco. And that's a strong throwdown. But like, I know San Francisco's not as like known for its
pizza. San Francisco
pizza
is not that great. I mean,
but like, there's a lot of people in San Francisco who think they've had really good pizza. I'm saying, no. This is like, this is a really, really good pizza.
Great.
We're going to have nowhere to be able to live after this. We may have to both move to London with you, Connor.
We're going
to get kicked out of... We can't go to San Francisco. We can't go to St. Louis.
I'll go back to San Francisco. I fucking care. I can't afford to live there anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, so are we ready to announce our next game?
Yeah.
Yes. Our next game is... We're going to do another NES game. We're doing Dungeons and Doom Knights. It is described as a Zeldavania, so it is a top-down in parts, isn't it? Like side view in other parts. I'm not sure.
I haven't gotten there. Oh yeah, kind of. Yes, it is.
Okay, it's an adventure game with comedy elements. It's got a lot of Easter eggs and throwbacks to other NES games and other 8-bit games. You can get the ROM for $14 on HeroMart.com. There's also a free demo available if you just want to check it out. You can also get complete in-box copies from HeroMart.com for $65, or you can get a very shiny gold Zelda-style cart collector's edition for $100. We will be playing this game on NES. Yep, that's it. Our next game, that is, as far as I know, the only place to get it. It has not been ported to anything else, as far as I know. You guys, so Bart, you've played a little bit of this game.
I have.
Right?
Yeah. Played a little more than a little bit.
A little more than a little bit. Okay. So far, you're calling this one a strong recommend, right?
Oh, I was calling it a strong recommend from the first 10 minutes that I played it at MGC. Like, I fell in love with it from the outset. And then we played the demo at your place, and we went through the demo, and I was just like, I can't recommend the demo enough. And now that I'm into this, I'm really digging it.
Yeah, so we wanted to kind of ride that wave. We had another couple of games lined up, and I know we're doing two NES games now, and we're kind of jumping all over consoles lately, but we really wanted to ride that kind of wave of enthusiasm there and jump on this one. So yeah, Dungeons and Doom Knights, get it at HeroMart.com and play along with us. This has been the Homebrew Game Club podcast. You can find links to our Discord, back episodes of the show, or other social media at HomebrewGameClub.com. And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at HB Game Club. If you like the show, please help us out by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or by telling all your retro gaming friends about our podcast. If you have comments or a suggestion for a game that you would like to hear us talk about, shoot us a message on social media or email us at homebrewgameclub@gmail.com. Or best case, jump on Discord and tell us there. Our opening music is by Twee. You can find him on Twitter at TUI2A03, where you can also find a link to his SoundCloud. Our outro music is by Raftronaut. You can find him on Twitter at 0000Jordan. You can follow me, Nick, on Twitter, Instagram, or Video Game Sage at DVertov. That's DVERTOV. Bart is on Instagram as Clever Username Needed, no spaces. And Connor is on Twitter at CONORNASH, also no spaces. Tune in next time to the Homebrew Game Club when we will be talking about Dungeons and Doom Knights. Thank you for listening. Outro music. Woo-hoo.
Did we talk about barbecue?
We didn't even get to that. The second question on the list was, who's got the best barbecue in St. Louis?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's something for a whole other podcast, I think. Yeah. Let's be honest.
All right. Tune in next time for the barbecue conversation.
Yes. We should do a side podcast, an offshoot, right? Where we just talk about regional food.
Yeah.
Because I think there's going to have to be qualifiers there, too. There's St. Louis style barbecue. There's different styles. I don't know.
Well, it's knockoff Kansas City style barbecue, which is, if you're going to copy anybody, I mean, all right, this is a whole separate conversation.
Yeah.
Okay.